Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are broadcasting live from the beautiful Dillon State Park here in East Central Ohio. Our guest tonight is Alfred Lambremont Weber, JD, born May 24, 1942 on a U.S. Naval Air Station. He is an author, lawyer, a member of the District of Columbia Bar, futurist, peace activist, environmental activist, and a space activist who promotes the ban of space weapons. He was a co-architect of the Space Preservation Treaty and the Space Preservation Act that was introduced to the U.S. Congress by Dennis Kucinich and is endorsed by more than 270 NGOs worldwide. He helped draft the citizen hearing in 2000 with Stephen Bassett and served as a member of the Board of Advisors. Weber is also on the Board of Advisors at the Exopolitics Institute, is a Congressional Coordinator for the Disclosure Project, is a judge on the Kalumpua War Crimes Tribunal, and is the International Director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. And it is my pleasure to welcome Alfred to the show. Alfred, how are you tonight?
Yes, just fine, and I'm very happy to be here, Mark.
What part of Canada are you living in, Alfred?
I'm on the West Coast in Vancouver, and we were at the site of the 2010 Vancouver Olympics, and we're about maybe a three-hour drive north of Seattle, Washington.
Oh, okay. So I bet it's getting a bit cold and gray there the past few weeks, huh?
Well, actually, we had snow, which is relatively unusual for Vancouver at this time, but it is colder here. Yeah.
And Alfred, you graduated from Yale Law School with a Juris Doctor, and you are a Fulbright Scholar. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And before we get into the meat of the interview, I wondered if you could tell us about this Mexican governor who was a supporter of the UFO ET movement that was recently assassinated this month in Mexico.
Oh, okay. Well, that was Governor Silverio Cavazos, and we were just down in Colima, Mexico, for the week of November 15th to 19th, doing what we called Exopolitics Week. And that is where we had the opportunity to be sponsored by a university and to take the whole week there in Colima at the university. And Exopolitics Week is a new concept that involves various elements and having both the university-based community and the host city experience exopolitics, which is the science of relations between among intelligent civilizations, and have them experience it in an educational context over a week's time. So the whole goal of this was to begin to acclimatize university students, educational institutions, university primary and secondary school teachers, teachers unions, and public and private media, all of which with whom we met at Colima in a very successful week. We even had a sky watcher, we call an intention experiment, by the Colima volcano, which is a very famous volcano that philosopher Rudolf Steiner, in his theories that the Earth is either a tetrahedron or a chestahedron, which is a seven-side figure, says that an axis, which is determined by the Colima volcano down to the South Pole and from Japan to the Caucasus, are the two principal axes, or two of the principal axes of this kind of geometrical structure of the Earth. So the Colima volcano is a very powerful place, an interdimensional portal. And physicist Nassim Haramy states that on planets, volcanoes serve as interdimensional portals for probes of interdimensional civilizations accessing our third dimensional civilization. Well, right here at Colima, we had such a sky watch, and we had Televisa, the largest Hispanic television network in the world, cover our sky watch, which had about 200 people with it. It also covered our lecture and ran it on a summary of it on nationwide television in Mexico, Mexico City, and a number of the principal cities. The governor, actually, is a former governor, but in Colima State, the governor, he had left office about a year ago, and the old governor for 2 years serves as kind of advisor to the incoming governor. And he participated in a lot of the activities. He was at a welcoming dinner, and he was at the lecture, and he was at another event we had, and then he invited us to a private dinner at his home, and mm-hmm. We even talked about extraterrestrial contacts and the contactees, and he talked about how he used some contact experiences in his governance, you know, when he made the decisions as governor. Well, we left at the end of Exopolitics Week, which was Friday, November 19th, and we got a text message on Sunday, November 21st, that at 10 a.m. Colima time, on Sunday, November 21st, Governor Silverio Cavazos had been machine gunned to death by parties in an SUV in front of his home. He was in the company of the Secretary of Educational Development of the state of Colima. And there's ongoing investigation. There's no evidence that there was any connection between the assassination and any of the events of Exopolitics Week at all. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing remains still kind of a murky mystery, but we even had met with the president of the state Congress. We went to the state Congress and met with the president there, a young, very energetic woman, a member of the Congress. And together we arrived at a proposal, which she said she would bring to her colleagues to establish International Celebration of Intelligent Civilizations in the Cosmos Day, which would be December 10th, the same day as International Human Rights Day. So the occasion of my going down there, another thing that occurred was we launched Exopolitics Mexico, and people can go online and go to their website. We're now going to have the first Latin American Exopolitics Congress in the fall of 2011, where we'll have all of the organizations in Exopolitics will attend, along with an international panel of experts on civilizations in the cosmos. So, things happen. And that happened. So he was, that's what occurred.
You must speak a pretty fluent Spanish then. Did you give your lecture in Spanish?
Yes, I did. You see, I'm bilingual in Spanish, and I'm bicultural in the sense that my mother's family is Hispanic, and I grew up in Latin America, so I, being a good Gemini, I can switch back and forth.
Oh, you're a Gemini too.
You know,
isn't that interesting?
I've become a gringo, and for me, it's just, you know, I don't really understand what the cultural divide is all about, because for me, it's just as easy to be a gringo as it is to be a Latino, and I can see things from both points of view, and I don't see any of the contradictions that people seem to see. I can see advantages to both lifestyles, and I like to take the best of both worlds and really have a good time down there and come up here and work hard and have a good time and go down there and work hard and have a good time.
Sure.
So I'm for breaking down the barriers and breaking down all of these, you know, differences that people have.
Oh, absolutely. And you must know Mel Fabregas then, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Mel and I are
and Mel speaks real fluent Spanish as well,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, sure. Sure, you know, so, yeah, and people in the Latin world are very, very open to the extraterrestrial presence and very interested. There's a fair amount of ET and UFO activity in Central and South America, and there hasn't been the same type of apparatus as there has been in North America with the Robertson panel from 1953 forward, where it was pretty strictly enforced in North America that all media had to ridicule it, and if you were in government or in education or in academia or in science and you mentioned UFOs, well, that was the end of your career. There's a little more cultural wiggle room down in South America and in Latin America and in the Hispanic world. Because, of course, in the cultures down there, I mean, they've been dealing with extraterrestrial visitations for centuries, even before the Hispanic conquest. And you just take a look at the Nazca lines, and, you know, they were sort of signals to the extraterrestrials. And that seems to be these are the lines in Peru. And there's a lot of sculptures around the world. I think in China, they just discovered a 3,000-year-old sculpture. I saw a picture of it of an ET astronaut. So
wow.
People around the world aren't as uptight as in North America, where you've had this tradition or this kind of enforced truth embargo since the 1953. Some people say that the principal reason behind that is blocking extraterrestrial disclosure at this point and why it's the U.S. holding it up is that what's really holding back extraterrestrial disclosure is the resistance of the Greys who don't want their abduction program known, and the U.S. government kind of having the contract with the Greys to return any downed Grey extraterrestrials back to their planet in the constellation Bootes. And in return, they've gotten a lot of leading-edge technology over the years that has made the U.S. the superpower that it helped make the U.S. the superpower that it is. So that's kind of the quid pro quo that we've had over the last 50 years. The Greys, this is information in former NORAD, Canadian NORAD officer's book, Stanley Fullam. But I think there may be some substance to it. It has a lot of congruency with other sources, and that is that the Bootes Greys have been genetically farming the Earth for several centuries, abducting maybe 30 to 40,000 humans a year, because their race is about to die out, and they need an infusion of genetic hybrids on their home planets or planet to further their race. It's not the paranoia that some of the people in the abduction movement say that they're preparing these hybrids to take over the Earth. But there's a lot of resistance by the Greys to having their abduction program made public because they think there'll be a great public backlash against it, and they see that as necessary to their future survival. So there's a lot of exopolitical bargaining, according to this view, going on, as between the other members of the regional kind of galactic governance authorities, the Pleiadians and the Alpha Centaurians and the Sirians, with the Greys, and trying to get them to place strict limits on it. And according to Mr. Fulham's information, there are about 30,000 or so humans being held in detention camps in the constellation Boothys, in Grey detention camps, many of them women who are serving as artificial, you know, as wombs for the hybrid race. And that this is kind of an exopolitical sore. The U.S. government is, I guess, making a negotiated hay out of it by allowing it to go forward, and their payment back is the military hardware and software technology that they've gotten, which allows them to have local hegemony over this planet. As I understand it, that's a greatly oversimplified view of what our current exopolitical situation is, but it bears out. For example, if you look at the Varginhas case in Brazil, where there were two Boothys, gray extraterrestrials, captured by the Brazilian Air Force with a downed gray craft, those grays were reportedly released to the U.S., and I got confirmation of that part of it from the leading exopolitical researcher in Brazil, A.J. Greveyard. Then the U.S., under that contract, the Brazilians released the two live gray extraterrestrials to the U.S. The U.S. then, under its contract with Boothys, the Boothys Greys, they released them to the Boothys Greys. In return, the Greys gave the U.S. payment in advanced extraterrestrial technology, and then the U.S. paid off the Brazilians in advanced terrestrial payoffs, you know, money or military hardware or something. So that's kind of how the local economy works. The same thing happened in Mexico, I learned during this trip. There's an underground base where there are three gray extraterrestrial, dead extraterrestrial bodies being stored along with a downed extraterrestrial craft. Two of the live extraterrestrials from that crash were returned by the Mexican government to the U.S. government. The U.S. government then, under its contract, returned them to Boothys in return for more technology, and that is Boothys extraterrestrial technology, to boost up their military hegemony over this planet, perhaps the solar system. And then they pay off the Mexicans in terrestrial credits, either military hardware or, you know, other stuff. But that's kind of the basic formula that is working against extraterrestrial disclosure now, and why all of the other countries have opened their files, but the U.S. won't. It's because they're basic subcontractors to the Boothys Greys under their abduction program, and everybody's stuck. Nobody can get the Boothys Greys to get off it because they are sort of very objective. They have no empathy in their genes. That's part of the reason why they're farming us, because we're very emotional and empathetic. And they say, nope, if we stop farming, we're going to die as a race, because they got into cloning, and they cloned not from originals but from duplicates. So they've degenerated. This is according to Stanley Fulham's information, but it seems, you know, there's corroboration of many of his points. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of our current exopolitical situation on that score. What the regional galactic council has said, apart from the abductions, is that they have come to the conclusion that Earth's environment, Earth's ecology, is on the verge of collapse because of excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and other causes, and that we've reached a tipping point. And that's identical to what the head of the Atmospheric Sciences Department at Wellington University in New Zealand told me 5 years ago in a series of interviews that I did with him. And he's a member of the Interdisciplinary Panel on Atmospheric Climate Change at the UN. And he said, look, no, the true story is that humanity's headed for extinction. And he had reached that conclusion about five years ago, and that's the conclusion that the extraterrestrials have reached also. So what they have said is that they had a meeting of their council, which includes the Greys also. It's about seven or eight civilizations, according to this version, and that they will intervene somewhere around 2015 to correct the situation here and use extraterrestrial technology to begin cleaning the atmosphere. And they've set aside, that decision involves setting aside the law of non-intervention. So we have these huge precedents in exopolitics that are being taken largely to an unaware human population. Of course, that's always been the case, at least in our current history. And but these are mega steps that are beginning to occur now.
Wow. That was a tremendous amount of information, Alfred. I want to step back a little bit because I'd like to go through some of this and ask you a few more questions.
Sure.
They have something called Exopolitics Week in Mexico, and I wondered, why do you think that we here in the United States don't have something like that at our colleges?
Well, there's a very simple reason, and that is that U.S. college has not stepped forward. We've been invited to deliver a lecture at Naropa University in April of this year. Naropa University is a Buddhist university in Boulder, Colorado, and we're going to do that, but at the level that the Mexican universities did, where you have the then head of the Scientific Research Committee and kind of a local committee get together, the primary and secondary teachers union get together, the university, a lot of the major media get together, the national television networks. I mean, Televisa is enormous. It's much larger than NBC, ABC, CBS in terms of its viewing audience. As I said, I think that this really comes down to the unfortunate effects of the 1953 Robertson Panel, which I think essentially comes down to the U.S. making a decision to keep its citizens in the dark about all the deals that it made with the Butes, constellation Butes Greys, back in the early 50s, so it's like the U.S. population has been held hostage. So you have a lot of the rest of the of other places in the world. You have a lot more institutional flexibility. And here in North America, for us to get up the the institutional steam to go into a university and say, hey, let's have an extra politics week, let's meet with the teachers union, let's meet with the faculty and get them up and running about how to address the curriculum changes. I mean, most of the faculty would be in resistance to the fact that there's any intelligent life outside of planet Earth. And that's a view that went out of, you know, went out of fashion in the Middle Ages. So it's just very, 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 very difficult because the U.S. has brainwashed itself into a corner at the institutional level. How we're going to get around that over the next 4 to 5 years is one of the conundrums, I think, that even the Pleiadians and others are addressing. What they said is that they plan in 2014 the Pleiadians are kind of the representatives of the local regional council because they look like us a lot. They would like to deliver a world speech in 2014 at the United Nations General Assembly, kind of saying, well, we're intervening because your ecology is about to collapse, as many life-bearing planets do, and these are the ones that are zero-type civilizations that don't make it to one-type civilizations. Zero-type civilization is a civilization that uses up its planet as an energy source, versus a one-type civilization uses the energy of the solar system or of the galaxy or of the universe itself, you know, the void of space. And what they said is that between now, 2010 and 2014, we're going to have a tremendous amount of transformational change on the planet. There'll be collapse of hierarchies. Many nation states will disappear. There'll be financial and economic collapse of the old order. So we're facing that kind of change. And in that kind of change, institutions that really open themselves up and begin to have some capacity building among the youth and among the young, up and coming engineers and scientists and people are going to have to take responsibility for the society and begin to learn some of these new approaches and just begin to learn the consciousness that we're in a populated, multidimensional, organized universe. Well, that's how you build up the new economy, and that's how you build the new institutions. Right now, if you're an engineer or you're a person who wants to work responsibly in the new technology area, you've got two choices. One is to work in your garage and try to scratch away something and hope that as an inventor, you know, you don't get clobbered by the government or, you know, some anti-new energy inventor, you know, goon squad, or you have to go work for an aerospace corporation or a defense corporation for the rest of your life and sign away your soul to the company store. So that's not much of a choice. So right now, our job is to begin to build capacity with the youth. We like to call it from ages 10 to 100 plus. And we're going to start building online educational facilities. One's called Exo University, where we'll have continuing education available in exopolitics, exosciences, and sciences. And these are projects which are in development now. They may take 24 to 36 months, but they'll be online for a new generation because the national security state only cares about preserving itself and the elite that funds it. and everybody else is sort of targeted for depopulation or for slave wagery. And that's about the bottom line of it.
Alfred, let me give a quick shout out to the chat room, and then I think we got a caller. I'd like to say
okay.
Hi to After Dark Radio, Elmar, Guest 3289, Guest 3340, Janet L, Jeff 72, Sasquatch Spirit, Star Charmed, and I would like to bring 936. You're on the air. State your name and where you're calling from.
You know who this is, Mark.
Hi, Thomas. How are you tonight?
Oh, if I was any better, I'd be in Tahiti.
Okay. Do you have a question for Alfred?
Well, yes. I just wanted to ask Alfred if he's had any communication with off-world species at this time.
Yeah. That's a very timely question. The answer is, I think, yes. In that we've started to do a series of what we call intention experiments. And you can go to our website, exopolitics.com, and you'll see a number of our examiner articles that describe recent intention experiments that we've done. One was just done down in Colima, Mexico, right next to the volcano there, where we had 200 people who went out and began to put out the intention of contacting, of, you know, interacting with interdimensional civilizations and their probes. And sure enough, you know, these kind of interdimensional UFOs start appearing and playing with the crowd and coming back and forth. And you photograph them, experts like John Kelly has photographed some of these lights at one of our experiments done last July 2010 at the Iseti Ranch. And, you know, that was a craft about a third of a mile across, which was between our circle out in this field and Mount Adams, an extinct volcano in the in the Cascades Range in Washington State at the border of Oregon State. So I would consider those to be contacts, and there was one contact, and we've written about this. This was over the July 4th weekend, 2010. There were about maybe 200 people in a circle. I think it was on the Saturday night of July 4th weekend, and we were doing intention experiments, and this large UFO craft came in to my left of the circle and started ambering along around the circle very slowly, and it stopped right in front on the far side of the circle, but I mean a long ways away from the far side of the circle. I couldn't say how many clicks from the far side of the circle, and sort of hovered there. And then I felt in my mind a communication which said, oh, you might have to go up in the craft tonight. And so I just sort of stood there. And, nothing, you know, to my knowledge, I didn't go up in the craft. And the next day, in front of the conference hall, there at the Iseti facility at Mount Adams, Washington, I went up to a number of the other participants who had been in that circle, and they all said that they had heard that voice, that telepathic communication in their minds the same way that I had. And that included, I even asked James Gilliland that the next day, and he said, yeah, they had heard it also. So whether or not we had a missing time experience and were taken up into the craft of the circle, I don't know. I tend to doubt it. But that's the type of thing that we have been doing with these intention experimenting out and seeking real-time interaction with upper-dimensional ethical civilizations, probably Pleiadian
Okay. The next question I wanted to ask you is about the abductions. If I'm not mistaken, I've heard people say this. There was a treaty or an agreement signed between those Greys you spoke of and President Truman. And that treaty was over with in 2002 or 2003, something of that nature. So the abductions and physical abductions are supposed to have stopped by now, at least here in the United States anyway.
Yeah, that could very well be. The most recent information that I've seen is as follows, that there are about 30,000 to 40,000 abductions which are happen each year, that that if you rank the abduction countries by the number of abductions, China's at the top, Russia is second, and the United States is fifth. I forget which the third and fourth countries are. That is the most recent information that I've gotten. And this is defining abductions in the strict sense of the Bhutis Greys, who are using these for genetic farming purposes, not where individuals are taken up for debriefings or you're having some kind of a contactee experience that relates to a soul experience or some kind of a destiny experience or some other exopolitical purpose. We're talking very, very focused, defined. This relates to the genetic farming that has been going on for the last three or four centuries here on Earth by the Bhutis Greys, if that information is correct.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering about that because I have a friend that has a something in her arm that shows up on X-ray, and she lost time, so to speak, back in 1997. So,
I was curious about that. You know, if the Bhutis have stopped abducting, then that's good news because that means that the major impasse to disclosure has now been lifted. I don't have absolute confirmation of that, however.
Yeah, what I understood, it was just in this country where a treaty was signed with President Truman, so I don't know about the rest of the world, just here in the U.S.
But that treaty has a quid pro quo, because that treaty, see, I think that treaty is still in force. Because that treaty essentially set up the whole exchange of gray astronauts, of downed gray astronauts system. And under that treaty, the U.S. rules the roost on this planet. And any downed gray astronauts, be they downed in Brazil, in Mexico, or elsewhere, apparently the gray craft still have problems entering our dense third dimension. And if they are down, then the live gray astronauts are to be returned to the U.S., and the grays deal directly with the U.S. They don't deal with other nations. And the U.S. has an established network around the world that monitors crashes and that secures the live grays from all of the other countries. And that's a fairly secure system. And from what I've read and understand and researched, and that's the mechanism by which the U.S. has maintained its military kind of superpower status through that technology. So there may have been a treaty with President Truman, but then there are also black budget treaties. And I think that it's, we're operating here in the black budget area, and this kind of regime is extra-constitutional.
Okay. One party comment, and then I'll go. I think one of the things that that humans are having to learn is that there are intelligent life forms right here on this planet that have been here. They're not from another world. They're from this world. And so my experiences have not been with off-worlders or ETs, whatever you'd like to call them. My experiences have been with the Sasquatch people.
Oh, yeah, sure. And there are a lot of Sasquatch sightings up here in British Columbia where we live. You know, there's a lot of research as to where the Sasquatch, what the origin of the Sasquatch is. And, you know, so anyway, I've seen a lot of that Sasquatch. Where do you live so that you come into contact with them?
I'm in Texas, about an hour and a half north of Houston.
Okay. And
my family has 900 acres just down the road, and that's where I've seen them seven times in the daylight over the last 2.5 years.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. There's a fair amount of and I've seen films of I'm sure that you've seen films of Sasquatch, and there and the, up here in our country here, in British Columbia there's a fair amount of Sasquatch sightings as well.
It's been a very interesting adventure because it's basically like being in a European explorer coming into another country like South America and learning the etiquette and the protocol and things of that nature, the behavior and what's acceptable and what's not, because they really have their own society and you have to be in sync with that and be willing to learn or they will just turn a deaf ear to you, so to speak. It's like they don't become aggressive or anything, but it's like, okay, another human. We'll leave him alone.
Yeah.
But, you know, yes, I've had them hold grievance against me, and the good news is you can negotiate your way out of that and be in their good graces again as a friend. So that's been the interesting part of my journey is learning the etiquette and protocol that they live by.
Sure. Oh, great. So, yeah.
Which kind of goes hand in hand with your exopolitics, because that's part of exopolitics, learning the do's and don'ts.
Yeah, that's the relations among intelligent civilizations.
Yes. So, that's been they certainly have enough mass to back up their etiquette and protocol. I'm 6'7", and I never thought I would run across another primate that could literally call me midget, but I have. So.
Wow.
Yeah, they're the big fella I interact with, he leaves a 21-inch footprint. So he says, jump,
oh,
I say, how
Lord.
High?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I thank you for taking my call, Mark. And Alfred, thank you for entertaining me for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate you calling and hear from me again.
Bye-bye.
Have a good evening. Well, Alfred, you've given us so much information this evening. It's just been fascinating. I wanted to step back a little bit again. And,
sure.
You were talking about this Kalima volcano as an interdimensional portal.
Yeah.
And also mentioned Nassim Haramein discussing volcanoes as being some kind of interdimensional portal, and I wondered if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. People can go to our website again, and the reason I say that is that it's just easier to remember exopolitics.com, and you'll see a number of our Examiner articles, Examiner.com articles there, on that have actual photographs of large UFOs, kind of large spacecraft, entering our solar system via the sun. And what Nassim Haramein posits is that the sun is a singularity. In other words, it's an interdimensional portal for entering our solar system. Civilizations which are in a parallel universe or a parallel dimension can access our solar system by coming through the interdimensional portal of the singularity of our sun. In the same fashion, if you go to the galactic level, science has now proven, it was confirmed as a result of a 7-year study ending in 2008, that there is a there's a large black hole at the center of our galaxy. In fact, the galactic black hole is kind of the energy source for the galaxy, and that galactic black hole, by this model, by the Nassim Haramein model, also is a singularity. That is, it's a dimensional portal by which interdimensional civilizations from parallel universes or outside the dimension of our galaxy can enter the galaxy. It's also a modality for transmissions from the universe within which our galaxy is located. And the universe within which our galaxy is located, as you might have guessed now, has a singularity. And that's discussed in the most recent book by a professor here at the Washington State at the University of Washington. And in fact, I'm going to reach over to my bookcase and get his book. Dr. Carl Johan Kalman. It's called The Purposeful Universe: How Quantum Theory and Mayan Cosmology Explain the Origin and Evolution of Life. And that is, our universe, which is one of an unknown number of universes inside the multiverse, is centered around a singularity, which is its kind of source. And that singularity is an interdimensional portal. So you can enter our universe through that interdimensional portal. There are hundreds of millions of solar systems in our galaxy, and there are hundreds of millions of galaxies in our universe, and that's on the low side. I mean, it could be much higher, and we don't know how many universes there are in the multiverse. I mean, we're just beginning. Science is just beginning to discover that. So this system is how consciousness works. For example, they're now discovering that, and this was a theory of the Mayan calendar, that the Mayan calendar is really a consciousness map. It has nothing to do with time or days of the week, but rather that the singularity at the core of our universe is emitting different sorts of waves of consciousness. And those waves of consciousness are mediated throughout the universe. They get mediated through the singularities in our galaxy, which come in through the singularities in our solar system, and then they get picked up by our brains, which are kind of our antenna and our minds. And we walk around thinking that, oh, we're thinking our thoughts, but we're really picking up on the thoughts that are coming out, these waves of consciousness that are coming out from the singularity at the center of the universe, that can be in enlightened unity consciousness, which is what the singularity is now shifting into. And that's sort of the mechanism by which this age of enlightenment is taking place now. So that's some of the theory about how humanity now is going through this evolutionary transformation where it's actually the universe which is transforming us. And we can help it along by, you know, really doing our homework and meditating a lot and, you know, being a good person and allowing our DNA to be activated. But all of this is happening at a mega scale through universal mechanisms.
Alfred, we're really running short on time. I wanted to read a little bit of something to you from a book that I really like. It's called The Human Quantum Leap, Confessions of a Former Intelligence Operative. And it kind of, very good book by A.J. Ensor. It coincides with exactly what you were talking about with these volcanoes and how, and also what Nassim Haramein is talking about with our sun. And I'll try to just be brief here. It says, to explain how one travels in space, we have to return to the topic of gravity in the fourth dimension. Stars and planets have gravity wells that project toward the consolidating quantum singularity searching for a point of equilibrium. The fourth dimension is an emergent property of this process. However, and this is where things get real confusing, the quantum singularity sits in and is also part of the fourth dimension. It might be easier to think of all the stars as telephones and telephone lines and the singularity as the phone exchange or central hub. And then it goes on to say, basically, one lays in a course based on the fingerprint, and meaning the fingerprint of the star, enters the gravity well of the planet one is leaving, and comes out at the planet one has navigated to. The trip is instantaneous. So I just wanted to share that with you because it kind of corroborates what you were talking about there.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe we only have 2 minutes left. If you wanted
Could
to tell
you,
everyone
it,
about
it,
your book, which I've been reading, and your website, I'd appreciate that. And I'm going to try to contact you right away and get you rescheduled, if you don't mind, because I think we barely
scratched
tonight. So go ahead, Alfred.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're at exopolitics.com. And that's a hub for all kinds of other activities. And our book is called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. We're now at work on a book on intelligent civilizations in the multiverse. That'll be out the first part of next year.
Well, Alfred, it's been a real pleasure having you on. And like I said, boy, I just got a few just through a few of my questions, and you've given us so much fertile, fascinating information. I just want to thank you again, and I'll look forward to our next conversation.
Wonderful.
Okay, have a good evening, sir.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.